picture a traditional military machine for a second. You know, you have your interlocking gears, a super rigid chain of command, and just completely standardized parts.
Right. Very uniform, highly engineered.
Exactly. And if a gear breaks or, like, doesn't fit the precise design, you simply replace it with another identical gear. It's built entirely around compliance.
Yeah, that's the historical model for sure.
But now I want you to imagine that same rigid military bureaucracy just throwing away the chain of command, stripping off the uniforms, and looking its personnel in the eye to tell them, your personal goals are actually more important than our operational metrics.
Which is just a wild concept.
It really is. Welcome back to our deep dive into the Royal New Zealand Air Force Mentoring Program. Today, we are thrilled to have you, our favorite learner, back with us for part two of this exploration. And today, we're answering one fundamental question. Why?
Yeah, because in our previous discussion, we established the what and the how of this program, right?
Right.
We looked at the sheer mechanics of mentoring without ranks.
Right, which was fascinating.
It really was. We saw how an Air Force managed to strip away traditional hierarchy to create these genuine developmental relationships. But today, our mission is to examine the vision, the deep-seated philosophy, and, you know, the core principles that make this specific framework a three-time international gold standard winner.
And I want to set the core theme for you right at the top, just so you can keep it in mind as we go through all this research today. The fundamental argument here is that a mentoring program truly succeeds only when it's designed for the individual rather than the institution.
Yes. And that is a profound paradigm shift. I mean, to understand how a massive military organization actually serves the individual over the institution, we really have to start at the very top.
The foundational documents.
Exactly. The guiding vision and mission. If you look at those documents, the vision statement is super clear. It states its purpose is, quote, to lead workplace mentoring so that our people can unlock and achieve success.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the language they use there is clearly very intentional, unlocking success. Because, I mean, in almost any other corporate or military setting, success is defined by the organization.
Absolutely. It's external.
Right. It means hitting a quota or passing an inspection or completing a specific deployment. But here, unlocking success is viewed as this deeply personal outcome first. They are basically saying that the individual gets to define what success looks like for them.
Yeah, and they combine this vision with a mission that focuses on providing an innovative framework plus an experienced support network.
Which is crucial.
It is. The underlying philosophy here assumes that if you unlock a person's individual potential, like if you help them achieve their own personal definition of success, that growth naturally cascades outward.
It spills over into the organization.
Exactly. It ultimately benefits the organizational outcome, but the organization's benefit is treated as a byproduct. It's not the primary goal.
See, this is what I love about this, because most military or, you know, corporate training, it operates like a factory mold. They take a person and try to press, squeeze, and hammer them into a very specific shape.
Just to fit the machine.
Just to fit the machine. But this program acts completely differently. Instead of a factory mold, it's more like a trellis in a garden.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Right. Because a trellis doesn't force a plant to be a tomato or a climbing rose. It just simply provides the structural support and the space for whatever that individual plant is already naturally trying to grow into.
That's a great way to look at it. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this represents a massive philosophical shift. Not just for this specific Air Force, but honestly for global military strategy in general.
How so?
Well, historically, military leadership has been exclusively about command. You tell someone what to do and they just execute the order. No questions asked.
Right, highly directive.
But this approach shifts the entire focus from command to development. It moves away from strict hierarchy and leans entirely into human connection because, you know, modern conflicts and complex global operations, they aren't just won by physical assets anymore.
Right. It's not just about who has the most planes or tanks.
Exactly. They are won by resilient, adaptable minds. Fostering human connection and individual problem solving actually builds a far more combat-ready force than blind compliance ever could.
I mean, that makes total sense. But a grand vision about human connection is, you know, beautiful on paper, But an ambitious vision is utterly useless without a functional framework to actually execute it in the real world.
It's just words otherwise.
Exactly. So how does a massive bureaucracy actually achieve this philosophical shift?
Well, they achieve it through four radical core principles. And I use the word radical very deliberately here.
Okay, radical. Why?
Because in a military context where control is usually absolute, these principles surrender control entirely. They do it to build a framework of absolute trust. So rather than just listing them out like a textbook, let's look at how they actually operate mechanically.
Let's do that. So imagine like a 20-year-old junior aviator walking into a room to meet a 50-year-old senior officer.
Okay, pretty intimidating scenario normally.
Very. But the very first thing that makes this interaction completely different from their daily military life is the first principle, which is voluntary participation.
Right. No one is ordered to be a mentor, and no one is forced to be a mentee.
Which is wild for the military.
It really is.
Yes.
In a world where compulsion is the absolute norm, where you are told exactly where to be, what to wear, and how to stand, this creates genuine intrinsic motivation. The people in that room are there solely because they actually want to grow, or, you know, they want to give back to the next generation.
Yeah, they opted in. And once they sit down, the second principle kicks in, which is that the relationship is entirely mentee-centered.
The mentee drives the bus.
Exactly. The young aviator is in the driver's seat. They set the agenda for the meeting. They define the goals they want to discuss. And they take total ownership of their own growth. And crucially, there is absolutely no compulsion to follow the mentor's guidance.
None at all. The senior officer is really just there as a sounding board. They're not a commander issuing directives.
Right. Which brings us to the third principle. And this is where the structural integrity of the program really shines, I think. Strict confidentiality.
Yes. This is huge. They don't just ask nicely for people to keep secrets. They build a literal structural firewall.
Wow. A firewall.
Yeah. Everything discussed between that aviator and that officer is completely protected. The only exception is if there's a severe ethical breach or a clear violation of military law. But otherwise, a mentor's notes cannot be subpoenaed for a performance review.
Wait, really?
Really. If a commanding officer tries to ask the mentor about the aviator's progress, the mentor is actually required by the program's rules to refuse to answer.
That is incredible. That structural firewall is exactly what creates profound psychological safety. And it directly enables the fourth principle, which is the absolute separation from performance management.
Yes, the ultimate rule.
Mentoring is entirely divorced from regular workplace coaching, remedial training, or the chain of command. Like, a mentor literally cannot be someone in the mentee's direct reporting line.
It has to be a completely separate space. Because if you are grading someone's performance, you simply cannot be their mentor. The roles are fundamentally incompatible in this framework.
Okay, wait. I have to push back here for a second.
For it.
Isn't it incredibly risky for a taxpayer-funded military organization which has very strict life-or-death operational goals to fund and run a program where mentees can work on personal goals that might have absolutely nothing to do with the military?
That is the big question, right?
Yeah. Like, what if an aviator uses this state-funded program in the time of a senior officer just to figure out how to leave the military and start a bakery?
It's a very common reaction. And honestly, it was a source of heavy skepticism when the program first launched. But here is the reality of human behavior. Psychological safety and trust. Those are the actual return on investment.
How would they explain that?
Let's look at the alternative. Without this safety, an aviator makes a mistake on a multi-million-dollar piece of equipment, or maybe they just feel incredibly burned out.
Mm.
But they are terrified of a reprimand. So what do?
They hide the mistake.
Exactly. They hide it. Or they quietly quit mentally while staying on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And in a military setting, that is incredibly dangerous.
Because they don't want to show weakness to the person who writes their performance review. I mean, it's just human nature to protect your own livelihood.
Precisely. But with this firewall in place, that same aviator can sit down with a mentor, admit they are struggling, or admit that they messed up, and work through how to fix it without ruining their career.
That's a huge safety net.
It is. And yes, a mentee might occasionally use the program to transition out of the military successfully. That happens. But far more often, when people feel genuinely seen, valued, and supported as human beings, rather than just cogs in a machine, retention and morale absolutely skyrocket.
So the organization actually wins in the end.
Oh, big time. The organization gets a more dedicated, clear-headed, and innovative team member.
So What does this all mean when the rubber meets the road? We've established the rules, the structural firewalls, all of that. But what does this framework actually look like when put into practice by real people who are so used to wearing the uniform every single day?
Well, the administrators of the program knew they had to visually break the traditions of the military to set a totally new tone. So during the initial pilot training for this program, they did something completely unheard of.
What was it?
They had all the participants attend the training sessions wearing civilian clothing.
I love that. That is such a brilliant detail, because think about what a powerful psychological reset button that is for the attendees.
Totally.
You have a room full of people whose entire adult lives have been heavily conditioned to salute a uniform. They are trained to instantly recognize who is superior and who is inferior the second they walk into a room, just by looking at, the stripes on a sleeve or the insignia on a collar.
Yeah, the hierarchy is usually visual and immediate.
Right. So by physically stripping away the uniform, you completely strip away the visual hierarchy. You're just two human beings in jeans and t-shirts, drinking coffee, sitting across from one another. It establishes a tone of total, undeniable equality right from day one.
It leveled the playing field before a single word was even spoken. And the sources we reviewed for this deep dive are full of specific stories that proves why this leveling is so necessary for actual development.
Oh, definitely.
Like, there's a really powerful account in the documentation of a mentee who was deeply struggling with their current role. And they finally opened up about their challenges and their true underlying aspirations. But the catch is, they explicitly stated they only opened up because the conversation was guaranteed to be outside of their chain of command.
Wow.
Yeah. If they had been forced to speak to their direct supervisor, they would have just remained silent to protect their career progression.
So the firewall did exactly what it was engineered to do.
Exactly. And another incredible dynamic that emerged from this flat structure is the concept of reverse mentoring. Because the program doesn't just flow in one direction.
Wait, reverse mentoring? Does that mean a 19-year-old recruit is sitting down and telling a 50-year-old colonel how to do their job? How does that not immediately trigger a massive ego clash in a military setting?
What's fascinating here is that the knowledge flow isn't treated as a one-way street from the top down. In reverse mentoring, senior officers or highly experienced mentors end up learning just as much, if not more, from their junior mentees.
That's amazing.
It completely challenges the traditional flow of institutional knowledge. Like, a younger aviator who's a digital native might provide a senior leader with entirely new insights into how the younger generation communicates. Or they might offer a fresh perspective on a technological shift that the senior officer is totally blind to.
Which is such a massive paradigm shift for a traditional hierarchy. I mean, it proves that true leadership isn't just about having all the answers because of the rank on your chest. True leadership requires the humility to actually learn from those below you in the organizational chart.
We really need to emphasize to you, the listener, how globally revolutionary this is.
Yeah, we can't overstate this.
In almost all global military contexts, separating development entirely from performance management is practically unheard of. Military training is historically remedial. You go to training to fix a deficit or to check a compliance box.
Right. It's rarely just for personal growth.
Exactly. This program has won gold standards from international coaching councils precisely because it fiercely protects the individual's growth space from the institution's operational demands.
Now, this revolutionary approach didn't just appear out of thin air. It wasn't pulled from some modern corporate management textbook or an HR seminar in Silicon Valley. Here's where it gets really interesting.
This is the best part.
This entire philosophy is deeply anchored in the unique cultural fabric of New Zealand itself. The culture actually provides the why behind the how.
Yeah, the program entwines biculturalism and national values directly into its DNA. It doesn't just, borrow cultural terms to sound progressive on a brochure. It operates fundamentally on those cultural mechanics.
Let's explore the cultural importance of ancestry and genealogy in this context, because rather than viewing an organization as just a temporary stopping point where you do a job and collect a paycheck, the culture views it as a continuous living lineage.
They view the mentoring program and the organization itself as an unbreakable chain of people.
An unbreakable chain.
Yes. And to understand why an island nation values this so deeply, you really have to look at their history. Survival depended entirely on passing down vital knowledge across generations.
All right, you couldn't afford to lose that knowledge.
Exactly. So in this cultural view, knowledge isn't something you hoard to get a promotion over your peers. It is a precious resource you are entrusted with passing down. Every mentor and every mentee is a link in a historical lineage. You are intimately connected to the people who served before you, and you have a profound duty to the people who will serve after you.
It's basically like a family tree.
Yes.
Instead of viewing the military or your career as a corporate ladder that you're trying to climb all by yourself, and, you know, stepping on hands and competing with peers to get to the top, it's treated as a family lineage.
A collective journey.
Right. You are morally obligated to lift up the next generation. Your success isn't defined by how high you climb. It is defined by how strong you make the links that come after you.
And that deeply relational view feeds into another vital cultural concept they utilize, which is holistic well-being.
Ah, yes. The four pillars.
Because the traditional Western approach to workplace development is intensely focused on output.
Yeah.
It asks questions like, how fast can you type? How well can you fly the plane? How efficiently can you turn the wrench?
Exactly. Treating people like the gears in the machine we talked about earlier.
But this program uses a cultural model that treats a person's health and capability as four interconnected pillars: spiritual, mental, physical, and social well-being.
And we should clarify what spiritual means in this context, right?
Yes. To be clear, in a secular organizational context, spiritual often means finding purpose, identity, and meaning in the work you do. It's not necessarily religious.
Got it.
And the idea is, if any one of those four pillars is crumbling, the whole person struggles.
Which makes perfect sense when you think about it. You could have an aviator who is physically in peak condition,
right,
and mentally sharp, but if their social pillar is broken, like if they are deeply isolated or their relationships at home are falling apart, they cannot function effectively in a high-stress environment.
No, they can't. The machine model just completely ignores that. But the holistic model addresses it head-on.
The mentoring program is literally designed to support the entire human being across all four of those pillars, not just their technical proficiency.
And because of this deep level of care, the program itself is treated culturally as a precious treasure.
A precious treasure. I love the reverence there.
Yeah, the leaders of the program don't just see themselves as administrators managing a budget line. They act as guardians.
Mm-hmm.
They are fiercely protective of its ethical culture and its inclusive nature.
They are guarding the space where people are allowed to just be human. All of this is perfectly encapsulated by the guiding proverb of the entire program. It asks a simple, profound question. What is the most important thing in the world? And the answer it provides is, it is people. It is people. It is people.
I get chills every time I read that.
Yeah.
But this raises an important question, doesn't it?
What's that?
How can other global organizations, whether they are, you know, tech companies, sprawling hospital systems, or massive logistics firms, how can they adopt this level of deep, culturally grounded care for their employees without it just feeling like another hollow corporate buzzword?
That is the million-dollar question, because we have all seen companies slap phrases like, we care about our people, on a break room poster. Oh, constantly. While simultaneously burning those exact same employees out with impossible metrics.
Right. The difference between a hollow buzzword and a lived culture is structure.
Structure.
This program doesn't just hope for a good culture. It engineered one. It succeeds because it built a structure that actively prevents the institution from hijacking the mentoring relationship.
They put immovable boundaries in place.
Yes. The structural firewall of confidentiality. The absolute separation from performance metrics. The insistence on voluntary participation. You can't just adopt the proverb without adopting the boundaries that actually protect the people the proverb speaks about.
That is such a crucial takeaway. If you want to truly invest in people, you have to actually surrender control over what those people choose to do with that investment.
It is a powerful reminder that organizations, no matter how highly engineered they might seem, are not machines. They are ecosystems of human beings.
Yeah.
And human beings simply do not thrive on standardized compliance. They thrive on trust, psychological safety, and a deep sense of belonging.
And that brings us perfectly to the core theme of this deep dive. What we've learned from looking at the Royal New Zealand Air Force mentoring program today is that the absolute best way to serve an institution is to genuinely, unconditionally serve the individual.
Unconditionally, yes.
When you remove the pressure of rank, when you strip away the anxiety of performance metrics, and when you simply sit two people down to connect as human beings, you unlock true, limitless potential.
You build an unbreakable chain.
Exactly. So we want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today as we wrap up. I want you to look at your own workplace, your own community, or even just your own life. If you were to completely strip away your job title, erase your performance reviews, and remove all your daily productivity metrics, who is the person in your life actively investing in your human potential just for the sake of it.
And perhaps the even more important question to ask yourself, whose potential are you currently investing in without expecting anything in return?
Think back to that machine we talked about at the very beginning of our deep dive today. You are not just a standardized gear meant to spin until you wear out and get replaced. You are a human being capable of incredible unlocked potential. And maybe, just maybe, it's time we all start treating each other that way. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We will catch you next time.